to the official podcast of FCS Fans Nation with your hosts, Kyler Neal, Matthew Frazee, and Lawrence Smith.
FCS Fans Nation, we are live with another episode. I know, guys, it's been a while. You know, we're not doing these weekly or even a couple times a week like the last couple seasons because football has been weird. It's been chaotic. There hasn't been a lot of teams. You know, only 15 of the 130-ish teams that we have in the FCS played this fall. So we've just been doing a couple episodes, but don't worry, guys. It's not just me. You don't have to listen to myself, Kyler, talk the whole time. We have a member of FCS Fans Nation. He's been a member with us for a long time. He's been a guest on the podcast before. He is the host of the Cocky Nation podcast. He's one of the JSU faithful alumni. And I guess we can actually say alumni right now. We have Brandon. Brandon, how you doing, man?
Doing good. How about you, Kyler?
Good. I heard you had some big news today.
Yeah, I just took my last test for my teacher certification today, and I completed my internship yesterday. I am done. All I have left is graduation. So in about less than 20 days, I will be an official alumni of Jacksonville State University.
Congrats. So you said you're being a teacher. What type of, you know, what are you going to be teaching? Are you doing elementary, high school? Are you doing band? I know you're a big band guy. Yeah, what's the goal of this career path you're choosing?
So I am a music education major, so I will be able to teach anything from elementary music to choir to band, all grade levels, K through 12. So okay. I will be able to teach
now,
it all.
Do you have a job already set up, or are you now going to start applying since your internship's done?
I will start applying probably starting next semester. With the way things are going right now with COVID and everything, there's not a whole lot of jobs being open, and with schools going virtual and all that, so schools won't be hiring, so say soon, so I'll be on the lookout for sure for jobs.
Yeah, how does that, so I know, you know, in Washington it's pretty much every single school is on Zoom, and I even think a lot of it in Texas is, and I believe there's some that are in person because I've seen school buses. But how does that work on a Zoom meeting, you know, being a band teacher? Do you break them out only into groups? You know, like I don't know how virtual band works in the high school level, junior high, you know, with everyone playing at one time through a computer. That's got to be tough. You can't pinpoint the mistakes. You can't pinpoint, you know, which instrument base is, how does that work? Or do you even know?
So basing off of what I have been told through my internship, a lot of band directors, they number one have meetings with the band. So that way they're at least talking and meeting and seeing how the kids are doing, making sure the kids are okay mentally and all of that. But they do have assignments through their online resources, whatever the school uses. I've heard they've used Schoology, Google Classroom, many different platforms like that, and they've given like playing assignments. So the kids would either record themselves playing, or they would record a video of them playing and send it in to be graded.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was curious. My wife and I were actually on the couch looking. There's a commercial about some Zoom school, and I was like, I don't know how band works right now. So since we got a band guy on here, I was like, yeah, let's just talk about it. Cool, man. Well, let's dive right into the episode. It's Saturday evening. What is it? 5:30-ish your time on the East Coast. But we have 26 questions, it looks like, or about 20 questions from the fans of FCS Fans Nation. And let's just kind of dive through and talk our opinions. They're probably going to be wrong. They're probably going to, some will be right, you know, but we'll dive through and talk about these. You ready?
I'm ready when you are.
Sounds good, man. So we have Adam Willie. Adam, the faithful guy from North Dakota State. North Dakota State fan, but he lives in Normal, Illinois. He should be an Illinois State fan, but his family, you know, they love those Bison for some reason. But he has a question for you specifically first. Why should JSU move to the Sun Belt instead of the A-Sun?
So I have pros and cons for both, so I'm going to touch on both of them. For the Sun Belt, we do meet the requirements for stadium size. Our stadium seats 24,000, and I correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the minimum required amount of seats is 15,000.
So it's weird. There's actually no minimum required number of seats. They recommend a 15,000 seat attendance requirement, but gotcha. Even like some of the schools the last couple of years, they're not meeting 15,000 seats average
no,
game.
They're not.
So it's weird. Like if you could actually probably have just talking about facts and what it says in the actual requirements to be FBS, you could actually probably have a 12,000 seat stadium and have 8,000 standing room only or whatever. And so you have 18,000 regular attendance and you technically qualify. Now, will any conference in the FBS want a stadium that's, you know, below 15,000? I highly doubt it. But I mean, there's actually no requirements besides okay. They recommend a minimum attendance of 15,000 per home game.
Gotcha. So tying into what you just said, our average home attendance for the past decade has been 17,500-ish. Yep. And with our highest being in 2015, where we exceeded 20,000. Our natural rivals would be Troy. It's an old rival. I believe it's called Battle for the Old School Bell. So that would be a plus for us, and I would hope a plus for Troy. Other natural rivals, possibly South Alabama, Georgia Southern, and maybe even Coastal Carolina. I wouldn't go as far to put App State on that list yet because we've never played them ever, but we have played Georgia Southern in the past, and there have been some close games, and then there were games where Georgia Southern just handed it to us. and then we beat Coastal the only time that we've played them. The competitiveness would be decent, but not great, with the biggest games being App State, Georgia Southern, Coastal Carolina, Troy, and Arkansas State. Should the Group of Five and Power Five part ways, then it might be a good move when it comes to postseason. If not, then it's not worth the move, in my opinion, to just play in a bowl game. There's no point in it. Cons, the only, you know, I'm a band guy, so I have to give band battles. The only band battle that we would have is Troy, and I don't even know if you would call that a band battle. Jack State fans, you know what I'm talking about. Just to give you some insight, Troy likes to play loud. They used to sound really good, but now they're just loud and they look awful on the field. It wouldn't even be a close match between the Southerners and the Sound of the South. The student enrollment and our endowment would be cons. Our endowment, I believe, is like just over 12 million. So that to me is a little low compared to schools like James Madison, Furman, Wofford. And we don't meet the available sports requirements to make the jump to the FBS.
How many do you guys have? I thought you guys had the minimum amount.
No, I remember I sent you a message about that. And you said that we were just like one short.
Oh, okay.
I remember it
differently. So, because I believe you need 16 sports. And I could be wrong. This is off the top of my head, trying to remember everything. I think you need 16 sports, and I thought you said you had that, but maybe we are both off.
Yeah, one of us is off. I don't know which one, but well, one of us is off. So okay. the last con would be the furthest traveling that we would have to do is to Texas State, which is a former FCS team. So that's our only last con for that. There's more pros than cons, but to me, I think the biggest thing would be financially, the Sun Belt would not be a good fit right now for us, especially with COVID going on and everything. It's easier for us to just transition to a different conference and stay in the FCS rather than go to the Sun Belt and make an FBS jump.
Gotcha. See, I personally love the idea of JSU moving to the Sun Belt. I think it is a perfect fit as long as you have the sports requirements, because all that's going to increase, you know, you have the facilities. I know there was a JSU guy going, we'd have to update all of our facilities. You wouldn't have to update one single facility. You meet the minimum requirements. Sure. Jacksonville State Stadium would probably be the worst in the Sun Belt, you know, maybe, because I believe Coastal Carolina's was pretty crappy, but they did a little bit of a renovation and now it's not as bad. But you would probably have the smallest, most outdated facility, but it still beats the minimum requirements, and it's still better than half of the stadiums in the MAC. But the MAC is just pure crap. But I love the idea of the Sun Belt for Jacksonville State just because the location. And if you're already meeting the minimum sports and maybe JSU is one shy, that could be it. And then that's where that extra cost, that'd be a little bit tough, but you'll get more money from TV deals. You'll get more money just from playing FBS schools and you're at a conference. So like Idaho, they were making, what was it? $1 million per game in the FBS when they're going to visit like Washington State or a UW, just to throw out a couple examples, where now they're in the FCS, they'll be lucky to make $450,000 from those games. So just being in the FBS compared to the FCS, you're going to get more money. Now you have to do about 20 more scholarships. That could be costly, but if JSU can afford it, which, you know, I'm not a financial guy, I haven't looked at all the finances, then man, I think they would be hard pressed to deny it. I think the goal should be to move up if you can afford it, if you're even somewhat of a FBS caliber type school. But I mean, the A-Sun, let's talk about the A-Sun a little bit. Now that could be a question down low, but there's been a lot of rumors about the A-Sun recently. And I know you've been an expert on these rumors. What's mm-hmm. happening with this A-Sun?
So just to backtrack to the spring when the A-Sun made this announcement, the A-Sun was wanting to combine the Coastal Collegiate Sports Association and the A-Sun, because the CCSA sponsored beach volleyball and swimming and diving. So the A-Sun okay. wants to start sponsoring that as well as football. So there was talks of expanding the conference to at least 20 teams, 18 to 20 teams. Jeez. And that way they could have an FCS conference based in the Southeast.
Now, but did they specify FCS or did they just want a football conference?
FCS. They okay. later specified further because people were so confused of everything. So they later specified FCS conference.
Okay.
And so after all of the waiting and all of that, we now have our first three possible candidates to be in this new conference or in mm-hmm. the A-Sun, which there's been talk of keeping the Atlantic Sun name to start or to get the change it to the United Athletic Conference. There's been a lot of talk about that. But just to clarify for some people, until we get that situated, these teams that make this move, they will be in the Big South Conference because of the agreement that the Big South and the Atlantic Sun have for football.
Okay.
So these three teams that got invited, or not invited, but they're in discussion with negotiation period. It's Jack State, Central Arkansas, and Eastern Kentucky. So if those three teams immediately decide that they are going to follow through with this, the Big South would now be Hampton, NCA&T, because NCA&T is joining in 2021, and that's when these three teams are wanting to join.
Yep.
So Hampton, NCA&T, Kennesaw State, Monmouth, UNA, Campbell, Charleston Southern, Garner Webb. Am I missing anybody? I think that's the eight teams that are in it right now.
Yeah, I think so.
And then, so you add these three teams, Jack State, Eastern Kentucky, and Central Arkansas. That is 11 teams in the Big South Football Conference, which, like you and I have discussed, this would boost the Big South to what the SoCon formerly was.
Yeah, I don't think it right off the bat is as powerful as, let's say, the SoCon was, because back in the day before the powers left, the SoCon was hands down the best conference. And I would say, you know, so the CAA was probably the second best, and they were pretty far behind the SoCon. Like, the SoCon was 100% the power, but man, this increases the Big South so much. It instantly puts them from, you know, you and I have had arguments on where the Big South OVC is, but it instantly, you know, drives the Big South up to bare minimum of the fourth best conference. I mean, you can have arguments that where maybe they can even be in the top three on specific years or whatnot, but this changes what we all say is the power three, more big three, whatever you want to call it. This would make definitely a big four or a power four, which is awesome because the South, we all know football's huge in the South. Mm-hmm. And when the SoCon, the powers of the SoCon left, it kind of left a void. You know, you had Sam Houston filling in there at Jacksonville State kind of for a couple years. And those were really the only two football teams in the South that were making some noise, McNeese for a little bit, but then it kind of dissipated. Now we have Kennesaw, Jacksonville State, you know, they're still a team that they're talented. They're arguably one of the most talented teams in the FCS. They just haven't been that successful compared to what they should be. But if you have Jacksonville State, North Carolina A&T, Kennesaw State, I mean, that instantly elevates the South for an FCS conference. And man, this is something the FCS as a whole needs. Another really powerful conference. And it's in the South where football is just, it's a different, I live in the South now. I live in Houston. It's just a different breed than anywhere else. Sure, there's big college towns like the Montanas where that's pretty tough to beat in terms of college football because that's their pro teams. But the South just does football a little bit different. And we've been lacking a really good Southern football conference since the powers of the SoCon left. And man, would this elevate, you know, the Southern hemisphere of the United States.
And hey, I'm all about hopping on the Big South train if this is true, with you saying that the Big South is better than the OVC. If this happens, there is no doubt in my mind that the Big South is now better than the OVC if these three teams join.
I don't know if I said the Big South is better than the OVC. I think I always had the OVC above the Big South, but this was the first year I put the Big South above the SoCon, which the SoCon's completely dropped off. They've looked like crap the last couple of years. Yeah, you have Wofford, and Wofford's, you know, they're talented. They're a quarterfinal.
Bring them to
the
Big South.
Bring them. Yeah, I doubt they'll want to leave. I doubt they'll want to leave. But yeah, man, this would be exciting for the FCS. I hope it happens. The Big South would be you're looking at two bids on down years, four bids on good years. Average of three bids, you know, it would be like the Big Sky. You would have another Big Sky type of conference, but down South, and it's what we need. I love it. I'm for it.
I am 100% for that. The question is, if these three teams join, who joins next? But I think we're going to be getting to that later in the podcast. So I'll say,
okay,
that
perfect.
Later.
Yeah. I haven't read through all the questions. I know you do a little more prep than me. I like to wing it because sometimes I sound really smart when I wing it. Cause it's like, oh, he brings up points. And then other times I just sound like a complete idiot. And I think that's fun. So Adam Willie asks another question real quick. So this is for me. He says, why am I the best Madden opponent you've ever faced? So he's talking about himself as why he's the best Madden opponent I have ever faced. And also, how was it with your punter as your quarterback? So guys, Adam Willie's been challenging me to Madden for the past year because I think on one podcast I said I was the best ever. And, you know, he's been challenging me. So recently we played. I beat him like 120-14 or something. It was pretty bad. And then he wanted to challenge me again. And I said, all right, pick whatever quarterback you want me to do. So he said, I had to use Easton Stick. So I used Easton Stick. I still beat him like 90 to maybe 20, you know, still bad. So then the next game, and we've only played three times, I said, all right, here's the deal. You can put punters and kickers as your quarterback. I'll be Dan Bailey. I still beat him. So Adam Willie, you are not the best Madden opponent I've ever faced. You would not do well in my fantasy Madden league. We would run all over you. We would pass all over you. And I'll say it. I am the best offensive player in Madden history. Challenge me, boys. all right, Adam, thanks for the questions. So we're going to go on to Kevin Geeter. So are there any coaches on the hot seat after this fall, you know, if they've played? Also, who do you think is more likely to be on a bit of a tighter leash going into the spring. Let's start with you and in your opinions on if there's any coaches in the hot seat.
The only one I was going to say was John Gross, but he had a really good performance in the fall. So I think he's kind of cleared up some things. Now we're still, I think a lot of people are still going to pay very close attention to him because of the bad year JSU had in 2019. But I think after beating FIU, and even though you say they're not good opponents, Mercer and UNA having good performances against them, I think he kind of loosened the reins a little bit.
Yeah, I definitely don't think those are strong opponents if you're trying to gauge how good you are as an FCS team. But JSU was the only, and I'm sure this might even be a question down lower, JSU was the only team that even looked remotely good this fall. So if it's coaches on the hot seat after this fall, look, most of the teams that were playing this fall, outside of North Dakota State one game, JSU, and Central Arkansas, they weren't playoff caliber teams even playing this fall. I don't think any of them were really on the hot seat. Gross would be the only one who was on the hot seat, and how he played this fall, I mean, like I said, I think JSU is the only one that performed better than what they were supposed to, and they're the only ones that even looked remotely good. But if we're just talking about coaches on the hot seat in general, I think John Hart from Richmond, I get they didn't play this fall, but I think he's on the hot seat. Richmond, as much as James Madison fans hate them, they are a powerhouse of the East Coast in terms of football. You know, from 2005 to 2016, I think the last time they made the playoffs, they made the playoffs, what, seven times? They had 12-plus playoff wins. And since the new coach, I believe he's in his third or fourth season, but his name's Russ, he hasn't made the playoffs. And Richmond is a team that, I mean, they've made the playoffs seven of the last 10 years, going back from 2005 to 2016. They were a playoff team. They expected wins. And now they're not even making the playoffs. I think he's on the hot seat. And then I got to say, the Idaho coach, Petrino, you know, he's the highest paid coach in the FCS. Idaho was supposed to dominate the FCS when they moved down from the FBS, and they have not played well. They have two losing records in Big Sky Conference. They're 3-5 each year. I think he's on the hot seat. You don't pay your coach that much, you know, when you're judging off market value. And when he doesn't bring home not even national championships, but not even close to competing for Big Sky championships, you got to be on the hot seat. So I think Petrino and then Russ from Richmond, they're the only coaches on the top of my head that I think are on the hot seat, but they didn't play this fall, so I don't even know if that applies. And then the second part of your question was, who do you think is more likely to be on a bit of a tighter leash going into the spring? Does he just mean in terms of coaches?
I believe so. Like, okay. If they were on the hot seat, did they loosen the reins a bit to not be on the hot seat? That's what I got from it.
Yeah, I would say we kind of already covered that. I think Gross was the only one where, you know, he's probably, well, I guess it says on a bit of a tighter leash. So this is probably, you know, coaches who weren't on the hot seat, but now since how they played this fall, they're like, ooh, maybe we should tug it back. Maybe we should, you know, be watching them a little more. Like I said, out of all of the teams that played, only three of them were even remotely considered playoff teams, in my opinion. So I don't think there was much to expect. And a lot of them were playing FBS teams, D2, like SFA, you know, they had six wins in a row because they played four D2 teams. I don't think this fall, if you're not Jacksonville State, really proved anything to any other of the 15 teams. Do you have anything to add on that one?
Yeah, I think we both pretty much covered it.
Yeah, it's a weird thing that's been going on this fall. All right, so Brandon Anderson asks, how many draft picks will the FCS have this year? And the second part of his question, so we'll dive into that right after, but how many draft picks do you think the FCS will have this year?
I'm going to go with maybe five, because last year there were only, what, two that got drafted? Ben DiNucci and the guy that was from Southern Illinois. I don't remember his name off the top of my head. But they were the only two that got drafted. So if not five, then definitely two that I know of, and that's Trey Lance and Trey Berry, which we all know Trey Lance is at least going to get drafted. But with Trey Berry, there's possible talk of him coming back to JSU for the fall. So yeah. he may either he'll sit out this spring or he may play this spring, but there's talk of him possibly coming back for the fall.
Man, I love Trey Berry. That kid, I wish we had him on our team. You know, that could be I could talk about Trey Berry for a whole podcast because he's just a beast. A freak of nature, 6'7" tight end who's, you know, he's a legit vertical threat. He's a wide receiver tight end. Yeah, listen, I think five's a solid number. I mean, you have North Dakota State that's projected to have 2 first round picks. They have a offensive lineman plus Trey Lance. I think there's definitely going to be some other players that get drafted. It all depends. This not having that many FCS teams playing, though, that's where it's going to hurt. So one of the big deals why we had a record low of FCS players getting drafted was the cancellation of the combine and pro day. There was no FCS players who had pro days. So that's normally when a whole bunch of, you know, scouts come to your school, that you do workouts for the scouts and you're proving to them why you were overlooked, why you weren't an FBS caliber player. And that's where you're getting drafted. A lot of the times that's where you're getting picked up if you're not having the hype of a Trey Lance. Listen, there's been 15 teams that have played this fall and most of them did not play full seasons. That's going to hurt, especially because the draft will be in the middle of our season this year. You know, the season starts February, the draft's in typically March, April. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. When is the draft?
End of March, beginning of April, sometimes end of April.
Yeah, so that's going to be in the middle of the season. It's going to be weird. You're going to have a lot of players opt out who think they have a chance at signing an undrafted free agency or getting drafted. And then the draft, so the combine, pro days, all that's happening in the middle of the season. I don't know if this increases the chance of someone getting drafted or if it decreases. My assumption would be it decreases, but maybe you have an NFL scout that's watching games and maybe it does help the chances. I think 5 or less is a safe bet.
Yeah, so, I would agree. Yeah. I would bet closer to 2 with it being Trey Lance and Trey Berry if Trey Berry decides to go into the draft. But if
well,
not,
NDSU
then
already has 2 projected first rounders. So I would say it's safe to at least say there's 2 coming from North Dakota State alone. And then, you know, you can sprinkle in a couple more like a Trey Berry.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll get a couple of the HBCU kids drafted in the 6th, 7th round. They always have really good classes. Yeah, I would say 5 or less is a safe bet. Like if I'm willing to put any money on, I would take the under on 5, but I think it'll be right around 5.
Yeah, I agree.
And then his Brandon's second question is, what is one thing you started doing during quarantine that, you know, you never did before? So not COVID safety things like wearing masks or staying away from, you know, your family or whatever you want, but what's a couple of new things that you've started doing?
So I'm big into working out and staying active. So when the gyms were shut down, it was very hard to work out. So I started running. Me and my mom both started running together. Don't do it anymore though, since gyms have opened up. I don't do running anymore. So, but yeah, I started running a good bit when quarantine started.
Yeah, I this quarantine, I actually went to the gym a lot. I was pretty big into fitness back in college. Then when I got married and moved around the country multiple times, you know, I like to say I got fat. I stopped working out, I started eating good, and I just did not care, you know, living fat and happy. But this quarantine, man, I started going to the gym a lot. I think I've lost like close to 25 pounds.
Hey, congrats.
Yeah, man, it's been good, the result, because I took, you know, before and after pictures of what it's been, and it's kind of night and day, and it makes me never want to get back to how I was just 6 months ago. But then the other thing I've been doing, man, I've been remodeling my kitchen. So I've been doing backsplash and getting rid of really the ugly kitchen that we have in our house. So when we bought this house, they remodeled the bathrooms completely. And they look amazing. Then you have this very basic kitchen. So we built a kitchen island, a custom island. We installed some butcher block on the island. Now I'm doing the backsplash in the whole kitchen. I have never done anything like this before. It's tiring. It's annoying, but it's starting to look good. But yeah, that's all I've been doing this quarantine. It's been working out and remodeling the house.
Sounds good. All right. Sounds busy.
It's been fun, man. Health is wealth. So, Cody Werlinger, and guys, sometimes I'm like Matthew Frazee. I will butcher some of your names. I know I've seen your name all the time on the page. So if I butcher it, I apologize. You can totally clown me on the page. That's totally fine. But he's talking about, with teams like Towson from the top FCS saying they won't be playing in the spring season, will there be any repercussions on scheduling with the FCS teams in the future? And I guess he's hearing, you know, rumors that JMU and other members of the CAA aren't happy with Towson right now. So I'll take this to start. I don't think this is really going to have any repercussions on Towson in the future. This is a weird event, you know, COVID. We've never seen anything like this before. We've never seen cancellations. You know, I think you'd probably have to go back to World War II, where we saw tons of cancellations, where even like Gonzaga basketball, you've heard of them, Brandon, they had a football team before World War II. After World War II, they canceled because they were canceling the seasons. It didn't make sense financially. They stopped playing football. I don't think anyone is going to really fault teams for not playing this spring. The spring was definitely optional. Of course, we all would love to have every single team playing in the spring. And I'm sure there's members of the CA that aren't happy because it kind of messed with some of their scheduling. And, you know, they had to do last minute reconstruction of the schedules. But I don't think this is going to have really any effect on a team in the next 5 years, next 10 years. It's just like, yeah, you didn't want to play this spring. And even if we don't agree with it, it's hard to fault a team for not wanting to play this spring. Financially, if there's no fans in the stands, it doesn't make sense. You're just going to be paying. There's no money games for Towson in the spring that they can play and pay for the season. So if there's no fans in the stands or limited fans, it's probably more of a burden to actually play financially. You know, I would say realistically, and I hate even saying this, they're probably making the smarter choice. But of course, we're fans. We want to watch football. So that's why I'm glad my team's playing, even though financially it's probably not smart to even play this spring. But I really don't think there's going to be any repercussions, Cody. I think it's just, it hurt some of the team's feelings, but that's about it. What are your thoughts, Brandon?
I agree. I think the only way that you're going to see any quote unquote repercussions is how upset are those CAA teams going to be? Because we've heard rumors of William and Mary going to the Patriot. There's a person on the page that told me that JMU might be looking at other options. That could possibly be the only repercussions, but other than that, I think you hit the nail right on the head.
Well, and even like those, William and Mary just fits the threshold of the Patriot League more anyway. And James Madison, I mean, if we're talking about FCS teams that are ready financially, ready in every single branch to go FBS, it's a team like James Madison. So even if they're butthurt about Towson not playing, and they're thinking about switching, or maybe this is the last straw that brings them to the FBS. The FBS was in their near future anyway. I think we're not going to see much. So Joshua Hoffman. So we talked a little bit about this in the very beginning, but let's branch out a little more. Thoughts on possible ASUN expanding even more. So you said there was 11 teams that are rumored. You said 20 teams. 11 teams would just be football and to be partnered with the Big South. But does this start the cast calling episode where, you know, they're just going to be calling pretty much every single team in the Southern Atlantic region to say, hey, please join us? I'm going to let you take all the ASUN questions.
I think so. I mean, like you said, it's going to stay in the Southeast. They want to expand to 20 teams by 2023. I don't think you're going to see all of these teams join right away. It'll happen over time. But in order to make this new United Athletic Conference, they need to have a total of 20 teams in all sports. So obviously the football conference is going to be less than 20 because not all Atlantic Sun members play football, or they play football elsewhere and don't play it in the Big South. As of right now, like I said, Charleston Southern, Garner Webb, Campbell, Hampton, Kennesaw State, Monmouth, and UNA are your Big South people right now. NCANT will join next year if the three teams join in the 2021 season. Then you would have Jacksonville State, Central Arkansas, EKU, and then I completely forgot about Robert Morris going to the Big South. So that's 12 teams right there that you would have in the Big South. Possible other additions, I could see possibly UTC, because UTC wants to be in the same conference as JSU, apparently. So that would be a plus for the Big South. I know you said they would be best for the FBS right now, but you could possibly see James Madison surprise everybody and possibly make this kind of move, especially with a new conference being made from all of this. You could also see possibly one of the Louisiana schools from the Southland join, and then maybe one or two D2 teams. I don't think both of these teams would join, but you could see either West Florida or Valdosta State come up from D2 and join the conference. Going off of football, you could possibly see Belmont come to the Atlantic Sun for basketball for when this new conference is made. So that way it has a safety notch for the basketball side of things. And due to rivalries with Lipscomb, that would be a good move, as well as the history with Eastern Kentucky and JSU. You might see a non-football D2 school like University of Alabama and Huntsville join. I'm not saying they would join, but because I don't know their financial situation, but you could see a team like that from the D2 come up that doesn't have football.
Okay. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. There's a lot of rumors, a lot of moving pieces. You know, I'm all for the ASUN expanding and bringing in more football teams, or at least making a conference more powerful with the partnership of the Big South. I definitely don't see James Madison moving. I don't think they would leave the CAA for anything less than an FBS conference, but yeah, we'll see. So will there be any conference reclassification explosion soon? So let's not talk about, you know, the ASUN or the WAC, but let's just talk about reclassification as a major thing. So COVID happened. A lot of teams are hurting financially. We really thought we might see some G5 reclassification during like the 2024 TV deals. If anything, COVID may have just sped that up. I think a lot of teams are hurting financially. I think we're going to see some major shift within the next couple of years at our level, at the FBS level. I just don't know what it's going to look like. And I don't know if I can speak, you know, well enough yet, but I do think we're going to have some type of explosion, and it could be a lot of teams either coming down, maybe an FCS G5 merger. You know, there's a lot of things that could happen. I don't know what it's going to be yet, but I do think something's going to happen sooner than later, especially with COVID impacting colleges around the country. Let's see here. Anything to add on that, or are you good?
Other than possible other teams that could make a surprise move, there was talk when all of this happened that Monmouth could possibly go and join the Northeastern or the CAA. And somebody else mentioned that some of the Missouri Valley Conference teams could possibly go to the OVC. And some of the OVC schools could go to the SoCon or Southland. And one move that I heard rumored during quarantine, but we have yet to see any development on it, is Tennessee State to the SWAC. I think, in my opinion, that is a much better fit for Tennessee State. But I don't know how the school views a move like that, because some people have said they want to be in the playoffs. They don't want to be playing for just a bowl game or a conference championship. They actually want to prove themselves in the postseason. So I don't know. I mean, it could be teams like that that make this reclassification explosion a interesting thing to talk about.
Yeah, I'm excited to see. I do think we will have quite a bit of change. The FCS and the conferences in the FCS today, I mean, I'm sure half of them will look the same, but I think we're going to see some major shift. I just don't know exactly what's going to be shifting or what it's going to look like, but I think it's going to be sooner than later, within a couple of years. So Big Ben Schleiger, or Schlieger. I always get that one mixed up, and I apologize, Ben. He's our faithful Northern Colorado fan. So everyone has given some sort of opinion on the WAC. Let's see, what's yours? And my computer just kind of took up half the screen. So he wants to know what's our opinion of the WAC, and what do you see in it? So do you want me to start off the bat, or do you want to take this first?
It doesn't matter to me. You have more experience on the West Coast, so how about you take it?
Perfect. I absolutely love the WAC and how they're trying to develop a football conference. There's still rumors on if it's going to be FCS or FBS. The WAC is grandfathered in the FBS, so from what I'm aware of, if they want to be FBS, they just have to meet the requirements. They don't have to have the rest of the conference votes to get them back in the FBS. But from the teams that they're recruiting, I think it's safe to say they are really focusing on an FCS conference. You know, they brought in Dixie State. They brought in Tarleton. They, it's rumored they have reached out to Southern Utah, a couple Southland schools like, what was it, SFA, and a couple like Sam Houston. I think they've reached out to those. Listen, I love it. There's only one legit conference that's really west of the Mississippi outside of, you know, just half of the Missouri Valley and half of the Southland. There's really only one conference out west. It is hard to get teams to come out west. And you can only have one. So the Big Sky is huge for one. It's overpopulated. We have too many teams. So with the lack of FCS teams out west, you can only schedule one Big Sky team in your out of conference every single year. So that hurts when you're trying to do scheduling. But yeah, what's my opinion on the WAC? I absolutely love the idea of them trying to bring an FCS conference back. I like the teams that they are recruiting. I think they should try and recruit some of the Big Sky even more, not just Southern Utah. I think they should go after Northern Colorado. I think they should go after really the California schools that are not Sacramento State. Sacramento State's been in the Big Sky for a long time. I think if Sacramento State had a choice, they would stay in the Big Sky, and then they would just have an out-of-conference rivalry with UC Davis, since they're only 8 miles apart. They can play every single year in the out-of-conference. That doesn't affect their rivalry. They can still have the big classic game. But from looking at who they're recruiting, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but it seems like they're really trying to not just be a West Coast conference but for football, but they're really trying to be a Southwest. So it's going to be, from what I'm seeing, you know, the southern part of Utah, which that's really close to Arizona. You know, they could possibly try and recruit a New Mexico team, some D2 teams in Texas. But it seems like they're going to really try and go after the region of Southern California, Arizona, Southern Utah, maybe New Mexico and Texas, and have an FCS football conference out that way. And I absolutely love it. Who do I see in it? Besides the teams I mentioned, I think they should go after those FCS teams from the Big Sky that I mentioned, and then if possibly even look at some D2 teams. I think CSU Pueblo, I think, you know, Colorado State Pueblo, I think they should be looked at. Colorado School of the Mines, they're a powerhouse D2 team. I think they should be looked at. And then, probably just some of the D2 teams out in Texas. Some of those D2 teams out in Texas, I mean, they already have facilities that are better than, you know, the bottom 30% of the FCS. They can easily make the jump if they can afford the extra scholarships. But yeah, I mean, I absolutely love it. What's your opinion on the WAC that you've heard so far? Who do you think should be in it?
I love the idea. There needs to be more of a Western presence in the FCS. Growing up, I loved watching WAC football. I got bashed at school for saying that I watched the TCU game or the Boise State game, and they're like, "Oh, you don't watch real football." And I was like, "Well, I mean, it's fun to watch." So I especially loved watching it when I was growing up. You're completely right about the teams that joined. Tarleton State, Dixie State, they've been in conversation with Southern Utah. I think they're going to join. I just have a hunch they're going to join. You said they've gotten in contact with Sam Houston State and SFA. They've also gotten in contact with Lamar and Abilene. Yep. I think Abilene and those other three schools, I think I have a good feeling that they're going to jump ship in the Southland and go to the WAC. I think this is the only place that we disagree on. The Big Sky is overcrowded, obviously. But I think for the Cali schools that they'll go after, I think that they should go after Cal Poly and UC Davis. I think regardless, that's going to be, regardless of what schools that you choose from the Big Sky that are in California, I think they're going to be all very good matches. But I personally would love to see Cal Poly and UC Davis in the WAC. Also, San Diego. Like, convince San Diego to go scholarship football and have them join the WAC. Also, New Mexico State, just drop down. You're embarrassing yourself at the FBS level. Just drop down.
I don't get why New Mexico State is still in the FBS without a conference, without a strong fan base. Sure, they're getting some money games, but it's not feasible for a long period of time.
Right. Northern Colorado, it could be a possibility. Northern Arizona, I know that they were a charter they're a charter member of the Big Sky, but geographically they fit the WAC a lot better than they do in the Big Sky. The D2 teams that you mentioned, I have no issue with possibly them considering the move to D1 sports and playing in the WAC for football. So I think the only place that we disagreed on was just what Big Sky schools should be in this conference.
So I think we actually agreed on the same. I said I want Sacramento State to be in the Big Sky, but the other two to go to the WAC.
Oh, I thought you had it backwards. I thought you were saying Sacramento go to the WAC, and I was like, why?
No. So Sacramento State, they are a Big Sky member in all of our sports, basketball, right, football. I appreciate them. They've been in the Big Sky for a long time. I grew up with them in the Big Sky. When I went to college, UC Davis was not a thing in the Big Sky. Cal Poly was not a thing in the Big Sky. Northern Colorado, Southern Utah, they weren't in the Big Sky. The Cali schools aren't in the Big Sky for basketball. Outside of Sacramento State, I want those two gone for sure. Cool. Cal Poly and UC Davis are beautiful to visit. It helps our recruiting because we go play down there so we can grab some more California athletes. But they're not a Big Sky basketball team. They don't fit the mold. They're still too new. They haven't developed really any history. I want the four teams that were not a part of the Big Sky when I was in college. So, and that's not even that long ago. You know, that's 10 years ago. I want them gone. So Northern Colorado, Southern Utah, Cal Poly, and UC Davis, get the hell out of the Big Sky.
Agreed.
Yep. But I want to keep in. I get if I'm a Northern Arizona fan. So I kept them in my Big Sky just because they've been in for a long time. They're in basketball. They bring some national pedigree in their track and cross country. But if I'm Northern Arizona and the WAC comes calling, it does make sense to jump ship. And I wouldn't blame them. But until then, I mean, I'll keep them in my Big Sky just because that's what I know. And then, so we'll move on. So Tim Rask, he asked, why does Kyler hate my team? Tim, I'm pretty sure you're a Montana State fan. If you're a Montana State fan, you're my second favorite team in the Big Sky. But I will root against all Big Sky teams really in the playoffs if you're not playing North Dakota State, because if my team is not in the playoffs, I don't care and I want the rest of the Big Sky to suffer. I'm petty that way. I'm not a Big Sky supporter where I'm like, yeah, go Big Sky, woohoo. But dude, if you're Montana State, which I think you are, your program I respect so much. Your program has everything I wish Eastern Washington had. I love your fans. I love your stadium. I love the intensity at your stadium. I like Montana State a lot, man. But yeah, I did root against you guys in the playoffs. That doesn't mean I hate you. You're not the other Montana, unless you are the Grizz. Then if the question was, why does Kyler hate my team? I mean, just being a Grizz, I mean, that says it all. End of story. Mic drop. If you're the Grizz, you're the Grizz. I don't like you. So it is what it is. So Scotty Reed, this is a question for you, man. Will Brandon make the trip up to Cheney when, and he says when, I'm going to say if ever, Jacksonville State returns their game they owed to Eastern Washington? Because he says we have one hell of a tailgate scene and he wants to party with you.
if it's during the regular season, I would love to, but because I just graduated and I'm looking for a teaching job, and if I'm teaching at the high school level, because Friday night football is big in Alabama, it's gonna have to depend on the football schedule. Because if we have a game Friday night, it's a no-go. Sorry.
Yeah.
But if it's like in the playoffs, or if I have a Thursday night football game during the regular season, then that's a different story. That's more likely to happen than if I have a Friday night football game.
And honestly, as an Eastern guy, and I would recommend, playoff games are just different. There's so the tailgate scene isn't as crazy. The atmosphere's, you know, it's different because it's more full during the regular season compared to our playoff runs. But playoff atmosphere, in my opinion, is just way better. It's cold. It's real football that you don't get in a lot of parts of the country. I would recommend you go in December if, you know, we ever host a game with JSU again, like back in 2013, I believe it was. It's just different. And then you get experience, you know, mountains, snow, some things that you'll never get in Alabama.
Hey, I'd love to relive a different version of Frisco.
Yeah, there you go. So Amos, what were the advantages of sitting out the spring? Also, from spring to fall, is there enough time to recovery from injury or fatigue? I think the only advantages really of sitting out the spring would be for your players who are basically going to be trying to make it into the NFL. I think it's an advantage of sitting out. So you're not going to have some of your star players that could elevate your team. Other than that, it's more just financially. If you can't have fans in the stands, a lot of FCS programs, they can't afford it. That's the only advantage I see of really sitting out this spring. And then is there enough time to recover from injury or fatigue? I don't know. I think there is. You know, that's, you still got months, but it'll be interesting to see. I don't really know how else to answer that.
Just some thoughts on spring to fall. Honestly, your season would end in end of April. Is that correct? With the playoffs,
yep.
How they're going to be set up?
Yep.
Okay, so you would have pretty much all of May, all of June, and all of July. And for most teams, all of August. I think the only two teams that are the only teams that would play in August are if you have an FBS team that you're playing, or if you're in the FCS kickoff. So for the majority of the FCS, you would have 3 to 4 solid months for recovery. I think if you take good care of yourself as a player, and with all of the COVID stuff going on, you follow the guidelines and everything, I think you should be good to go by September, end of August.
Yeah, I think so too. We'll just have to see how it plays out, but I think there is enough time in between the two, but you know, we've never had this. We'll see. Yeah. This is just let's wait and see, without too much speculation. So Scott Moody, we only have a couple more questions, so we'll try and fly through these because we're getting up on an hour. So Scott Moody asks, with the FCS playoff committee announcing that fall games will be considered when selecting and seeding teams, who put themselves in the best position? Here's the deal. I think only one team put themselves in the best position, and I'm going to give credit where credit's due. Jacksonville State, Brandon's team right here, and this is why I'm speaking first to give him a little bit of credit. They're the only team that benefited from playing this fall. You know, UCA, they were another playoff team. They already announced they're not going to be playing this spring. Other than that, only North Dakota State, in my opinion, was a playoff caliber team. And maybe, you know, Southern Illinois, I think, had one game. But that's about it. That were actually real legit playoff contenders. And most of them underperformed, where Jacksonville State went 3-1. Their only loss was to, you know, Florida State University. They were supposed to lose that game. They have an FBS win. So they are the only team that now doesn't fully have to win their conference to be, you know, in the playoff discussion, besides North Dakota State. But we didn't think they, you know, it's the Missouri Valley. They're going to get a couple teams in there, and they went 1-0, but they didn't look as good as they should have. They benefited, but not really. One game doesn't hurt or fix them. But yeah, Jacksonville State's the only one where now they can go 7-1 in the OVC, where if they didn't play this fall, and they went 7-1 in the OVC and didn't get the auto bid, they might not have made the playoffs with only five 5 spots available. But since they went 3-1 and they have an FBS win, they have some pressure off their shoulders. They do not have to win the auto bid in the OVC to get a playoff bid. Now, they can't go losing too many OVC games. I would say 6-2 hurts their chances a little bit, but 7-1, I think they're still 100% in the playoffs. I think they grab one of the auto bids. They're the only team that benefited. But good thing for JSU is I also think they're going to win the OVC, so it won't even matter. But yeah, what's your thoughts, man?
I agree with that FBS win against Florida International. Now, granted, it was an ugly win, but it's an FBS win nonetheless. And I believe Craig Haley said the same thing. JSU put themselves in the best position to get an auto bid. I think that 6-2 would still get us in the playoffs, if not on the bubble, primarily because these games that were played in the fall are, I don't know if they're going to be carried over into the record for the spring.
Yep, but they will.
So essentially, we would be 10-2, or 9-3 with two OVC losses. So I think 9-3 would still get us in the picture. Maybe grab that last at-large bid. But I'm like you. I think we're gonna go overall 11-1 for the fall and the spring and win the OVC.
Yeah, 6-2, I think it puts them on the bubble. I don't think they're for sure in because there's only 5 spots available. And you're probably, at the end of the day, we got to look a little bit at the OVC history. And I mean, the Big Sky alone has more playoff wins in the last 2 seasons than the OVC does in the last 15 plus years. So when it's a weird season and not everyone playing conference games or full schedules, I think the committee is going to have to look a little bit in the historic history where a team is, because it's going to be hard to gauge. So if you lose 2 OVC games, I don't think you're out of the playoffs for sure, but I think it's going to be much tougher. But if you go 7-1 and let's say SEMA wins the OVC, I think you're still in the playoffs. You grab one of those 5 auto bids or at larges. But yeah, JSU is the only one that benefited playing this fall. All right, so Paul Dobson asks, when you're tailgating and it's downright chilly outside, what's your drink of choice? Brandon, is it ever chilly in Alabama?
Occasionally.
Well, what's your drink of choice?
When it's cold outside, anything with whiskey.
There you go.
I'm a whiskey guy. Love me a good whiskey. Anything else, you can pretty much just throw 50 yards in the opposite direction from me.
Yeah. Yep. Nope. That is, if it's a winter guy. So I love Jameson more than any other whiskey. You know, it's not that classy. I just like it. I've been drinking it since I was a kid, you know, sorry, mom. But if it's super cold, I'm a Jack and Coke guy. I like Jack and Coke, the darker whiskey. It works, keeps me warm. But yeah, I think we're both on the same thing. If it's cold out, you're drinking whiskey.
Yep.
All right. So Bruce, another JSU guy, he goes, in an ideal world, what is the best number of teams in a football conference? He says 9 is his opinion. Brandon, what's your ideal?
I say 9-10. The reason I say 10 is that way you're alternating out at least one team every, 2 years? I think that's the rule for the Big Sky and the Missouri Valley and the CAA that have more than 9 teams. So I like 10, but 9 is also very good because you're playing all of the other 8 teams like you do in the OVC.
Yeah, I think it depends on how many conference games you have. There's not a set number of conference games you need to have. So, you know, typically you have an 11-game schedule. That's why a lot of teams, they like to do 8 conference games, because it gives you 3 out-of-conference games. It gives you a home game, a money game, and then whatever else you can do. If it's another home, if it's away with another caliber team, it's whatever you can afford or whatever you can schedule. But there's no way of saying you can't have 9 conference games and only 2 out-of-conference. So I would say I love 8 conference games personally. I think 9 is the best. I love being able to play every single team. It gives you real legit champions, because then even if you have a tied record, you give it to the head-to-head winner, where, you know, even if you have 10 teams, there's still that one team where maybe the top two teams don't play, or one of the top two teams doesn't play, the other one does, and it can sway who's the real champ. So I think as long as you have as many conference games as, you know, if you have 8 conference games, you need 9 teams because you can't play yourself. I think that is the key. You need as many teams plus one, including yourself, as, you know, you have conference games. And I think you should just be able to play everyone. Or if you're able to, which you can't at the FCS level and participate in the playoffs, if you have a North-South regional, then it doesn't matter. And if you can play a championship game, then that'd be awesome. But in the FCS, if you want to participate in the playoffs, you cannot have a conference championship game. That's why the SWAC does not participate in the playoffs. They have a conference championship game. But yeah, that's my opinion. So we have one last question. So how soon could we see St. Thomas? So that's the new D3 team, I believe it was, who they skipped D2. They went right up to D1. But yeah, how soon could we see St. Thomas cut into the Minnesota talent pipelines and win over recruits from Northern Iowa, South Dakota State, Northern, you know, North Dakota, and then North Dakota State? And also, will St. Thomas be able to throw their weight around because they have one of the largest endowments in the FCS? Here's the deal. I don't think I can say they're going to throw their weight around in terms of, are they going to compete nationally right away? They were a dominant D3 team. They got really kicked out of D3 because they were killing everyone. That's a big jump going from D3 to D1. They have nice facilities from what I'm aware of. It's a beautiful little campus. They got a lot of money. They'll definitely be able to win over some recruits. And, you know, money will only get you so far in the FCS. It definitely helps. You know, I'd rather have more money than not. But look at UC Davis. They've been in the FCS for, a little over 10 years now. They have a $1.6 billion endowment or something like that, and they've made the playoffs one time. Money isn't everything. It depends on more of the culture, which St. Thomas has a better athletic culture, at least for football. And are you going to be able to really win games and continue to build an audience, which St. Thomas probably can, but it's going to take them a little bit of time. What's your thoughts on St. Thomas?
Pretty much the same thing. It really depends on what conference they're in. Since they moved up from D3, I think that they're going to spend a few years in the Pioneer League before they try.
Yeah, I think they are going to the Pioneer League.
Yeah. So until they decide to add the scholarships, I don't know what conference they would go to, probably the Missouri Valley. But even then, if they make the jump to the Missouri Valley, like, you're competing against North Dakota State, South Dakota State, Illinois State, you're not going to be able to run through those teams like you did in D3. And even if you do make the playoffs, it's no guarantee with how much money you have as your endowment. Like you said, with UC Davis, it's no guarantee that you're going to be good in the playoffs just because you have that much money.
Yeah, I mean, look at half of the CAA. Half of the CAA has an endowment over that. You know, the CAA, the Patriot League, super rich. Look at what they've been able to do in the playoffs. Most of the time, they don't do well. The Patriot League has a bigger endowment. They're not able to throw their money weight around. But they also, I mean, I would say the Patriot League doesn't have a rich culture, but they do. They, you know, they have some stud teams from way back in the day, but it just didn't translate when other teams started catching up athletically. But yeah, man, I'm excited to see St. Thomas play, but I don't know what to expect of them yet.
Now, I will say this about them.
Yeah.
San Diego will finally have some competition for the Pioneer.
Yeah. Sorry, Dayton. You're just not quite, you know, San Diego runs through the Pioneer League. When was the last time they lost a Pioneer game? It's been like, 2014 or something?
Yeah, 14 or 13. They've been dominant in the Pioneer for at least 5 years.
Yeah, at least. Yeah, it'll be nice that San Diego definitely has some competition. Do I think they're going to have instant competition? No, I think St. Thomas is in for a rude awakening their first couple years. It is a big jump. But yeah, we'll see. Going from D2 to D1 is a big jump. Going from D3 to D1, that is a big jump, even if it's the Pioneer League. So Brandon, before we sign off real quick, we're a little over an hour. Thanksgiving is next week. What is your favorite meal on Thanksgiving or your favorite dish?
So my favorite dish is a congealed salad that is, it's a family tradition. It is called Coke salad. It has Coca-Cola in it. It has pecans, black cherries, black cherry jello and blackberry jello. It is one of the best things. You can have it for breakfast, lunch, dinner, as a dessert. I mean, it is just an overall one of those meals that you could have for anything. And it's one of my favorite Thanksgiving dishes.
Oh man, if you could see my face right now, that sounded just disgusting, but I'm sure it's good. every Southern dish I've had down here, like when you look at the ingredients, when you look at it, I always think, man, that's not going to taste good. And it always does. So I would definitely try it, but ugh, how you explained it, I don't want any part of it, but I am sure it is good. I'm going to have to go. My wife makes the best stuffing I have ever had in my life. So last year, we went to a Dallas Cowboys game because it was just us for Thanksgiving and we didn't want to cook. We are cooking this year, even though it's just us. But yeah, she makes an Italian stuffing. So it's got like tons of Italian meats. So it's not just, you know, your cornbread stuffing and a couple things like celery or whatever. I don't even know what you put in stuffing. But she has tons of Italian meats in there and it's delicious. And yeah, that's my favorite part of Thanksgiving besides the turkey that she makes. The turkey's bomb too.
All of that sounds so good.
It's amazing. All right. Well, Brandon, thank you again for jumping on here. If you want to tell the listeners where they can find you and even, you know, give your podcast some love, you know, start talking about a little bit about your podcast. I'll give you a couple minutes before we head out.
All right. So you can follow us on Facebook for Cocky Nation. Just look up Cocky Nation, a JSU podcast on Facebook, request to join. We'll accept your invitation. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter, cocky underscore nation. We have not recorded since March, but I'm still trying to convince the boys to do an episode soon because of all of this A-Sun discussion. So it's been a while since we recorded, but we will try to get something in the works by the end of the year.
Well, it's been a pleasure and I can't wait to listen because yeah, you guys do have a lot to talk about. JSU, they've been making some moves. There's new conferences. The South is getting crazy and they had a good fall. So yeah, Brandon, thanks again for jumping on the podcast. We really do appreciate it. And for all the FCS fans nation, you know, you guys can find us FCSFansNation.com on Facebook. You know, you can go to the website.com, find us on all the social media. There's links. It'll bring you there. If you're listening to this podcast, you already know where to find it. So I don't even have to tell you, but if you can give this podcast a review, that helps. It pushes it up the little Apple podcast so people can find it easier. So if you can give us a review, a good review, that would be helpful. But yeah, thanks again. We're signing off and I hope everyone has a happy Thanksgiving. Goodbye.